got an invitation to this APAC training workshop that's starting in the week of the 11th to the 14th or something of October in Durban. It's important that people indicate their availability. Maybe some will go under the banner of Scopa, but from our side, anybody from this committee who wants to participate, they should indicate so that the committee can fund that person's, that member's attendance. let me pause there and then invite any comments or questions from colleagues. Mr. Steele?
Thank you, Chair. Just one comment. I see we have a new draft report dated 15th of September, analysis of annual report for the Auditor General. I just want to note my concern here, Chair, without going into the detail in any way, but I just want to note my concern that changes and amendments which I proposed at our last meeting last week and which were accepted by the committee have not been taken into this new version. I really don't see the point of the committee making decisions as to how reports should be worded, which are then simply ignored or not taken forward. And I just want to express my dissatisfaction and concern that this is the situation. I just don't see the point of us proceeding if our own recommendations are not properly recorded.
Yeah, I think when we get to the substance of it, we'd have to deal with that matter. I gave an instruction to the researcher stroke secretary to make sure that by Tuesday we had a revised version that must be made available to both the AGIS office and members to enable all of us to prepare for today's meeting. So the AGIS office have a sense of the observations that are being made by the committee on the report and be able to address those accordingly. I was advised that the supervisor the research unit was now with the document and that he could only make it available at 3 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon. And because of the lateness, I said I will not go through it first. It must just go directly to members and to the AGIS office, because in any case, today would be the day to look at those matters. And if there are gaps, it would be the day to deal with that. Bearing in mind that the intention is to use it as the basis for making the observations. All I can say is that the committee section, the onus is on the committee section and the research unit to see to it that they provide the appropriate level of support to the committee, and if they fail on that score, they would have to account for that as to why are they failing to do so. I can't do more than that. I do not make appointments as to choices as to how my committee should be supported and so on. That's entirely an institutional arrangement. So all we can do is raise those matters with the institution itself. But all right, maybe we'll deal with those issues when we get to it. AG, welcome. We got your apology that you had difficulties along the way. We had, in the meantime, started to discuss some house matters, taken advantage of the gap in time. Colleagues, is there anybody else who wants to raise any other matter? Honorable Mashiani.
Unfortunately, Chair, there's only two of us this morning.
Yes.
One chairperson, or the chair is the third one, yeah. Chair, firstly, on the matter of minutes, I don't have a set here. Maybe I can be provided with that. Two is on the matter of us, the possibility of us having the site plan really don't see the feasibility thereof, and would propose that we look at the Friday after that one. But also linked to that point is that most of your committee members also sit on the Public Accounts Committee. Now, the program that has come out of the Public Accounts Committee during the workshop held this week says to us that we'll be having committee meetings also on Fridays. Now, I think we have to migrate to a point where we alternate the Fridays so that we're able to do work on the other side and work on the side. Otherwise, you're going to end up with no show, in especially in schoolwork. We might have to discuss that, or maybe a discussion between the two chairpersons of the committee to look at some form of cooperation. In terms of the REMCO issue that you have alluded to, I would like to see a point where we deal with this matter and finalize it as soon as possible, as during the discussions, the initial committee meeting discussions, there was an admission from ourselves that it might be disadvantaging the AG in some form. I don't know how we can speed that up, but I would appreciate if we can try and short circuit, you know, the so that we're able to get into a decision. I know Parliament at time takes forever to come back, but maybe some form of, you know, I don't want to say pressure, but something like that, so that we're able to deal with it. Also on the question of the appointment of the new auditors for the AG's annual report, I think we financial matters, I think as well, I appreciate that the AG's office is complying, unlike other departments who will forever, you know, use the same auditors. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Let me say that first, with regard to our meetings, we were told in no uncertain terms that at the Chief Whip's forum it was agreed, and therefore it is law, if you like, in this institution, that if you are condemned to be a Friday committee, so shall you be for the balance of your existence. So, yeah, we unfortunately have been so condemned, and regardless of whether everybody else would be available on another day and on another time, other than this, the decision when and where to sit as a committee does not lie entirely in the hands of the chair or the committee itself. It is an institutional matter. So you get told whether or not you have been granted permission to sit. When I was appointed to chair this committee, the perception was that this committee has two meetings a year. And that's it. So even the selection of people to serve on the committee was made on that assumption. And that further complicates matters, because it means that members of this committee have priority committees elsewhere as well. So it is a challenge, but on top of that, you then have a situation where some of our members are committed in other committees that sit on a Friday. And committees like SCOPA, Finance, I think Justice, seem
the documentation you are referring to, Chair, yesterday, which had a number of observations from the research unit. And I was not hoping that I was going to put a slide here with responses to those questions. Otherwise, then it defeats the purpose of the interaction. Otherwise, we would have posted a document to you if that was the preference. So really, I think maybe this is an opportunity for the committee to put to us those issues that we may need to respond to. Otherwise, it will take the essence of what this meeting was about if I were to put the standard type answers that we considered, especially considering that we only got it yesterday. So there was also the challenge of not only responding to the questions, but trying to understand some of those questions. So I thought if you guide us in terms of how we need to engage with these questions that you had, based on what you figured out in the annual report, we'll be happy to respond to them then.
It makes a lot of sense. We interacted with the report, and we now need to put to the AGR the outcome of our interaction with the report so that we can get some responses to it. Perhaps what we could do is to ask the researcher to take us through the issues that we interacted upon last week, and then at that juncture, if there is a member who wants to add or rectify in the light of our discussion last week, do so before we do the kind of responses. Well, before we receive, we invite the AG to
obtained in AG's auditing of performance information, performance auditing and relevance index report. Then it refers to table 1 of the annual report. Bullet point number 1 in that section, it says auditing of performance information. Performance information, performance measured with the predetermined audit coverage milestone as defined in the audit of performance information, in which targets were set at 100% for 2009/10 financial year of PFME cycle. The AG's actual performance met the set target of 100%. Therefore, SCOWAC should congratulate the AG on this achievement. Then paragraph 2 in that section. The
Chair, on a point of order,
yeah?
If we haven't read this in advance, can we please just be given 5 minutes to read it? Otherwise, we're going to be here all day. Business of reading things aloud is just, to my mind, a complete waste of time. So either give us all 5 minutes to read it if we haven't seen it, or let's assume that we have all read it already and then we can discuss the substantive issues.
Yeah. Now, I was not really inviting the researcher to read everything that's in there. All I wanted him to do is to explain the context that leads to the question and rather focus on the questions themselves. So that was the idea. So that he highlights the questions that are being put across. Maybe just give the gist of why that observation, and then explain the questions. So, in the first instance, you're alluding to us having observed the 100% performance,
yes.
And then maybe just get to the second.
So, the question is based on the fact that the municipalities, they did not submit their financial statements on time. Some of them they submitted late. Then the question, it says, did the Auditor General inform the Speaker of the Council, the National Treasurer, and the MEC of local government, and the MEC for finance in the province of the failure by the municipalities to submit their financial statements, as it stated on the MFMA section 126 subsection 1. It's required that section 133 subsection 1 be Roman figure 1.
Okay, that detail. And so the second question that's been put across is what was the response of the MEC, and what measures have or can be put in place to ensure that any pending challenges are resolved in this regard. I think that's the essence that you're putting across. Maybe let's just pause there and ask if colleagues feel this is a fair reflection of what we would want to put across, or if there's anything that anybody wants to add on this score, the essence of what we're putting across. All right. DAG, you want to respond to this area? In essence, all it's being said really is one congratulating you for the 100% in relation to PFMA, but then with regard to MFMA, where the 100% mark has not been achieved or
first response is to just make reference to the fact that this is the tracking that we do continuously, even subsequent to the date of reporting, and also to say that with this tracking, there is ongoing engagement with the provincial premiers as well as the relevant two MECs, that is finance and COCTA. I think they call it COCTA in the provinces, to engage them on these issues. The main province that is affected here, to a large extent, as would be reflected, because this number would in a way be consistent with what would be reflected in the local government general report in the Northwest, which had a number of municipalities that had not submitted their financial statements. And in that province, fortunately, we have also had recently in June door-to-doors to every municipality, and have established that during the door-to-door, most of the municipalities have subsequently made the submissions of the financial statements, and all that was remaining was to finalize the audits of those financial statements. The interesting statistic here also, if I may just stick to statistics before I respond to the third bullet, what can be done to resolve the issue. The third statistic is that we've just drawn the submissions for 2010 in the last week or so. I think it was this week. Yeah. Once again, there is a high number, unfortunately, in fact, pleasingly, of submission of the financial statements by most of the provinces in local government, with the exception of two, which is not Northern Cape, and once again the Northwest. In the Northern Cape, we've just finished the door-to-doors last week, and in fact had identified the reason for the delays in the submissions. And those reasons are largely due to the fact that there is a heavy dependency on consultants to prepare these financial statements. And there just happened to be one consultant that is providing the service to the entire population of needy municipalities in that province. And therefore, those that have not submitted have indicated to us that they've done what they could, but they're still waiting assistance from the consultants. There are few, though, that have made a special request for the delay because they're finalizing certain information that is crucial, especially assets.
ordination from the provincial local government and treasury officers, and can we put that in the report as a factual conclusion?
Can I also add, obviously the general report, we had agreed that we will have to look at our program again and see where to fit it in, which I think
quite a turnover of leadership, both the political and administrative possibly. But we have told ourselves that we will continue with the quarterly visits and simply change the intensity of the message, and then it will smooth itself out as we go on. And we do hope that the issue of that stability of leadership will then be taken care of as we go forward, because it is a point that is being made as one of the reasons for some of the lack of progress. And therefore, coming back to how it's escalated to the political leadership, we have established quarterly engagements with the premiers and their coordinating forums. And many of these coordinating forums have happened for the first time to lay the baseline this year. And they are meant to be used as a way of doing comparative analysis of whether we are improving or going backwards on these issues. So, all in all, I think that the structure that has been put in place is adequate enough to deal with all the possible permutations that could take local government backwards, and all the possible permutations that would strengthen the good practices that exist in local government. Because now the engagement with the highest level of leadership is not accidental or not ad hoc, it's part of a quarterly calendar of premiers. All we need to do now is to confirm that that calendar is respected, that calendar does happen, and where we haven't heard from the premiers, we also do contact their offices to find out when these are happening, because this came out of the local government roadshows, where the universal consensus right across the provinces was that these premier coordinating forums would be a useful vehicle to keep track of the actions that need to be managed at a political level in order to improve performance at local government level. So, let us say, I believe that we've done all that we can do within our means to respond to the issue of structuring the level of engagement. All that will remain now is to get the leadership that will be fully informed to act on the issues that they are aware of. But there can be a political leadership in any province that can say we are not aware of what it is that is the key reason for local government performance lapses or local government performance excellence. Because that will be part of our dashboard on a quarterly basis, the PCA. variances to the impact at the level of audit outcomes. And that's why these interventions have been introduced, can I call it proactively, so that we don't wait until the end of the audit year cycle to discover surprises. It's been the first baseline engagement that we've had. We haven't had second ones. And the third ones and ongoing, the subsequent ones into the future. But your sentiments are also correct, that these engagements quarterly are meant to do a comparative analysis of progress going forward or going backwards, and be able to understand what is driving those trends. And at a point in time when you cut off, in the general report will also reflect the analysis of those audit outcomes in relation to what effort has been put throughout the year by the leadership. And remember, Chair, that this effort to engage the leadership is to elevate these issues to what we have discovered as the main root of excellence in government. Because we've found that when leadership takes ownership of these issues, results have been amazingly impressive. And on the other hand, when leadership has not been as active as it should have been, results have also followed suit. And you've seen negative performance. So there has never been one instance where there has been an incorrect correlation in that respect between leadership and results. It's always been an amazingly very consistent correlation between active leadership and leadership that has not exercised their leadership responsibility. And that's why in these key controls, and I know I didn't go into the details, one of the overarching key controls is leadership oversight.
community like Sol Plaiki in Northern Cape produces a disclaimer as an ordered outcome. I mean, surely that is a nasty shock when you have a municipality of that size actually receiving a disclaimer. In other words, its accounting is inadequate.
Maybe I also want to add another point here. A few weeks ago,
greater amount of effort to reverse the trend of multiple disclaimers over the last decade. We were there, I mean, 2 weeks ago, and we got a very impressive feedback, and Treasury has been there also because of the high capacity municipality, the progress they've made to respond to issues of key controls is most impressive. Was most impressive for us. I don't want to compare it to others, but it's at a satisfactory level. All that remains now is to relegate that effort to positive audit outcomes as well. But from what we saw, there can't be anything that gives rise to the main reason for the disclaimer, which is lack of information. I mean, the system and the manner in which things are being done and controlled is such that for every information that is reported, there is a supporting schedule, there is a proper reconciliation, there's a proper coordination of information in terms of the treasury requirements. Once again, is a practical example of where leadership is determined to do things in a particular way, and they insist on it, things do happen. Yeah. And on the issue of the audit outcomes, like disclaimers that you've referred to, what gets done about them, I think the one thing that can be done about those issues is to have no tolerance for disclaimers, because they can mean a lot of things. When you cannot have access to information, you don't know what is hidden behind that veil of secrecy. For us, what is most encouraging is the fact that the National Minister of COGTA has set as a target that disclaimers should be the first issues to be tackled, and within the period of, I think it's 2011, there should be no municipality that has got a disclaimer. So there's a clear target there, even though the ultimate target of clean audits is 2014. But there's also another important milestone to eliminate all forms of disclaimer in local government and government. And obviously, with that being a national priority and target, one expects that any conditions that give rise to a disclaimer through these quarterly assessments will result in the leadership making the relevant interventions to prevent the continuation of those conditions. That's why, once again, once one keeps going back to the question of information is and will be known, it will now remain on the political leadership to act decisively on the consequences of information that is undesirable, and equally so for information that is most impressive in terms of placing the right amount of support to sustain it and provide recognition where recognition is due. But there ought not to be a situation where conditions for performance can be said to be unclear. I think we've created a platform now where performance will be known, and the reasons for performance either way ought to be explained at the level of leadership.
That was the first area of observation. Are we satisfied to move on to the next area? What's the time now? What time is it, Tigray? Maybe before we go into the next area, we could have a 5 minutes tea break and then return to deal in earnest with the next area. You mentioned Treasury going in with yourselves into the municipality, which raises another interesting issue, and that is the level of cooperation between Treasury and yourselves in pursuit of that ultimate goal. Because it seems as if whenever we're dealing with issues of capacity, the
That
in that way, we can, that format can be shared with ourselves, because we have observed such tools being used in the interactions with the auditees, which we thought was quite a good thing, where your officials would sit with the officials of the municipality and give them a checklist, if you like, of the things.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Shall we move into the next area? Just give us the essence of what the next area is and what the question, therefore, that is being put across is. Without reading it out in any detail.
The next area is 7.2, the visibility of leadership. So the question would come from the fact that the AG didn't conduct survey this year. It stated that it will be conducted in 2010. So could the AG maybe indicate as to why the survey will be conducted next year? Visibility of leadership.
Ideally, I would imagine that the intervals at which some of these things would be done would be within the framework, say, of a 5-year strat plan that says in the 5-year cycle, these are some of the things that would happen biennially as opposed to annually, and these are the things that would be annual, and that kind of distinction would. I just need to be reminded. I don't have my bearings at this point in time around the strategic plan cycle.
Three yearly. Yeah.
All right.
But in the
so within each cycle, each 3-year cycle, we would at least be able to do all the essential things, including this particular area.
Yes, indeed, Chair. Yeah. And it's more explicit in the strategy plan that follows this one, the one that we discussed last year. Yeah.
Right. Or because we're reporting on a previous strategic plan implementation cycle, so the one that is still coming at the level of reporting would reflect more accurately what has happened. Yeah. All right. So you've got the essence, research, and it's you've captured it correctly in your notes. All right. Let's proceed.
The next question is due to the fact that the AG did not measure the output on office environment branding requirements in 2009 due to the budget constraint. How much would be the budget for measuring the office environment branding requirements? It's still 7.2, but it's another paragraph on another question on this now. Where it says due to budgetary constraints, then the AG could not measure the output on office environment branding requirements. 2009. So the question would be there, that how much it would cost to, and what effect it is. Evaluate this.
AG or DAG?
So it's one of the areas that we felt we did not push hard on, particularly when we considered the fact that when one considers issues of branding, I mean, we, for example, do not own almost all the buildings that we use across the whole country. So it would require us to put aside some money in respect of capital expenditure, among others, to make appropriate signage that makes it easy for anybody to identify an office of the AG and all of those things. So one of the things that now that we have SFLAS is one of the things we're going to be starting to look at. But I think the other thing to note is that as far as the office environment branding is concerned, we've also in the last strat plan decided not to give a huge amount of effort when we started looking at cost benefit to it, because some people were focusing on things like having a standard look in respect of things like furniture, as an example. You know, if you walk into the Northwest or into the Eastern Cape or into Bobo or the AG office, there were those kind of things that were being measured, and we said we are not like an Absa bank. If you walk into an Absa bank in Potchefstroom, the look and feel and the design and the signage and where the deposit slips are and how they look like and the withdrawal slips and all of that, that is very necessary for those type of businesses because you're dealing largely with the public. So if somebody works into Absa in a different town and they're looking for a withdrawal slip or a deposit slip, they ought to be finding something that is pretty much a replica of what they found elsewhere. But if you look at our environment, I mean, the office environment within the AG is the back office environment, if you like. Not continue to make sure that as far as the identification of the public, things like corporate signage and all of that, stationery and those type of things, this is something that is standard, and that one we are going to be putting in our plan for this next year, because we think we do have the necessary resources to do it. So there are elements of this that we felt consciously that we ought not to really proceed, because it will basically be giving feedback to us predominantly, because nobody else ever goes into those, that internal environment of the office.
Yeah, obviously this is confined to the physical office environment. I don't know to what extent issues, broader issues of visibility and public awareness of the institution, its role and its location for purposes of the area of building public confidence and so on, where the public would feel that they are conscious of the role and they are able to access the AG, be it for accessing information or for providing information which they believe would assist the AG's office in discharging its constitutional mandate. In other words, the whole area of interaction with the public maybe would be more of interest rather than, you know, corporate identity. I mean, we're not Coca-Cola or Checkers who would be especially interested in ensuring that as a brand, you know, we exist, we're out there. But even in their case, they would be out there for purposes of attracting more customers. In our case, our customers is our, maybe the question is, who are our customers? Is it just the auditees? Is it just the parliament and the other institutions to which we report our audit outcomes? Or is there another customer? Is that customer a hidden customer? Namely the ordinary men and women in the street who have an interest in the services that get delivered, the resources that get properly utilized, and therefore any auditing that happens and the outcome thereof on those matters. Maybe we need to pause and reflect on that question, because maybe that's where the relevance comes in. I don't know if you want to comment on that, Honorable Steele, to catch up with us. We're on.
No,
you've got it. All right.
Chair, the points that were raised earlier regarding our visibility program, among other things, are also positioned to achieve that objective. When we go to these roadshows, particularly when the sharing of the PFMA and the MFMA audit outcomes is the item we're dealing with, we always conscious that our message must reach not only the direct constitutional stakeholders, but it must also reach people beyond. And that is normally catered for in our engagement with the local media, including the likes of your community newspapers, community radio, and all of those people, the various provinces. So I think it is tackled at that level, because it goes to the public with a concrete message about the issues that the public will be interested in. And I think at a different level, recently we were at a meeting with the Deputy Speaker's office, where they were pulling together a unit under the office of the Speaker to deal with institutions that support democracy, among others. And one of the things that was highlighted there was also to give prominence to the work that is done by all of these institutions. So I think there's an element of it at an institutional level within Parliament that recognizes that indeed they need to be starting to also do some work in that regard. But on our side, every year when we go out to the provinces, the objective is to say if other people can get access to the type of issues that we are contributing to in terms of the audit outcomes, it will trigger the interest in
else who want to comment on the issue before we round it off and move on to the next one? I don't know if you have any further comments.
Perhaps I can just comment briefly on that one, that it's an issue that we have taken note of, and we believe that we need to engage on it very moderately. But we need to engage on it in a manner that is, as described, newsworthy and informative, and attracting the attention of the public in a positive manner. And our Marseille Communications Unit is alive to that reality, that having done this extensive amount of awareness behind the scenes, it is now getting closer to the time of letting the general public away of what they can expect when, in order to see better results, and for them to be able to exercise their own rights as citizens to respond to issues of accountability and transparency. Yeah, so it's something we're working on, which take guidance from our communications experts as to how moderately it can be done, because we also don't want to make it in a sensational manner. And I think the way you put it is very appropriate. Yeah. We have taken note of that advice. Yeah. Thank you.
Right, we'll leave it at that. Honorable Steele and Honorable Mashiani. Maybe let me start with the ladies first. Honorable Mashiani.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just linked to that, my question would be, because more and more the public is aware of the existence of the AG's office, do you ever get inquiries from the public asking for annual reports to look at into the financial spending of the departments or any other entity that you do audits on?
Just a couple of words of advice on communication, Chair. The public hates waste, and they love to see money saved. So if you can show them that a clean audit eliminates waste and saves the money, you've got something you can sell to the newspapers.
Yeah, and one could add that I think what essentially we're saying is allow. It's like street justice, you know. We don't want to allow a situation where people feel they must resort to those kind of unconventional methods. Yeah. If you want to react further, that's fine. But then we'll need to proceed to the next area. Just pause. Let's get another one on this one. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the communication, I would like to understand in what language, because there's another aspect that people, they say these people are coming and tell us something that we don't understand. What languages are they using when communicating? Thank you.
Languages, a difficult one because
the local languages that people will understand, you know. So maybe we should look at it from that perspective, and maybe it could be one of the observations or notes or recommendations that, because that would also help reduce the loss of confidence of citizens living in that location of the oddity. If the oddity proactively informs people, this is the money we got, this is as far as we could go with the limited money, and the Auditor General confirms that we didn't steal the money, it can only help them. You know, even where there's been disclaimer, if they're able to, through some kind of explanation, I don't know how it works, able to explain the context that as a municipality we've taken measures to investigate whether there could have been any wastage of public resources or corruption, and we satisfied that none has occurred or whatever, rather than keep quiet and say, well, there's a disclaimer and it's raised suspicion in the public eye. And nobody gets to say anything about it. People will simply assume disclaimer equals theft, corruption. Somebody's head must be chopped. And that's how people will see it. So essentially all we're saying is communication really is key with the key people, who is the public, because it's all about public funds anyway. Maybe we should leave that one at that and move to the next area. Research on leaders.
The AG has improved in terms of retaining the trainee auditors who qualify to be chartered accountant. So the question is, what is this retention strategy and the plan that the AG is envisaging in the next years?
So that's the human resource development area, and I think linked to that is also the skill, the skills, the professionalization. Is it part of this area?
Yes, it's part of this. The training auditor scheme that has also achieved the target.
Yes, the target was 5% and they've achieved what, 32?
No, the target was 32.4%, and those are about 93 auditees.
Was that the audit target or the outcome?
It was the target, 32.
And the outcome?
They achieved 32%. Then the target was 5%.
That's what I'm trying to
say. Then they achieved about 32%.
Yeah. I suppose the other question is, why was the target set so low? We understand the level of difficulty places that low target as the realistic target within the broader professional environment, but
signed between the training office, which is us, and the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants. So they look at their horizon in relation to their term of employment in the office and in line with the training contract. So the retention, in order for it to happen, is not something that comes automatically. It's something where you need to put a lot of effort into to make sure that at least those that you want to retain, you can succeed. Because otherwise, if a person signs for 36 months, they already know from day one that end of that 36 months, they are somewhere else. Absolutely. So that's firstly to answer the question why the target is so low. But I guess when you look at the demand and supply, the reality of what is in the labor market currently, there's not that many options for people to go and try other jobs elsewhere. Because if you look back to the last 18 months or 2 years, most people have preferred to stay where they are because there's no real growth in employment elsewhere. So if you look at this 6.6 turnover that we've achieved, it's a combination of the real market environment in which we operate, where people rather stick around to in the place where they are than to try and find a job that will take them 18 months or so to secure in some situations. But this 6.6 has also come as a result of our own efforts as well in starting to put together a program now that which says to the employees, by the way, the 3-year term is just a signed agreement in terms of your training contract, but when we look at issues of performance as well as the issues of your own interest in becoming part of the future staff and leadership of the organization, we still think that there's a place for you in the AG to consider. And many of them have responded to that. And I must say that it has been a positive outcome to know that even most of those that qualified, because a black trainee accountant in a number of situations, these are the people we're talking about, are very attractive to institutions in the public sector and very many other places because they are in demand in that area. So I think we have seen the initial stages of success on our part in respect of the retention program that we have introduced, which says there is future employability at the AG. It's not just about you doing the 3-year training contract. There's a career growth path that we have for every and any level of staff that we have in the organization. There's a number of people that have responded to that because for a long time they thought that it is law that you must be in here and you must be out at the end of 36 months. There's no flexibility about wanting to retain you. So I think many of them are starting to understand that in actual fact, linked to the 3-year training contract, there's also a potential for long-term career in the AG, whether it is within the regularity audit. Others have gone into areas like investigations and performance auditing because they're starting to respond to the fact that we are clear and very determined to contribute to the building of human capital in the public sector. Others will remain in the office as auditors, but others normally after a long stay move into senior CFO positions in government. So we think that our contribution is not only confined to our own needs as an office, but it also addresses the broad area of financial management skills in government. So this 32.4% that we see in here, I must say that it's a combination of what the market is currently looking like, as well as our own additional effort into this. But I think further strategies around how we want to retain our staff, we will share when we engage on the strat plan. Because the other reality also here is that, which I think is fundamental to the sustainability of the work of the office, is that it's very expensive to recruit people every year because you've got to subject them to some training. Now it is in our interest to try and retain as many people as possible because if an experienced auditor that audits foreign affairs knows the environment at foreign affairs, having been at a managerial level within foreign affairs for a repeated period of time, the ability to efficiently execute the audit is higher than somebody who comes 1 year and then the next year you've got a different that among a community of people whose horizon is limited within a 3-year period, measured against the actual experience of the very same people staying longer. That's the difference between the 5% and the 332.
The next bullet point is the improvement on culture index. The committee requires that the AG explain as to how important is the culture index as far as the human resources concerned in AG.
Environment. And linked to that is the ongoing communication that important to us to make sure that there's proper alignment between the people that we want to retain as well as those that have many years of experience in the organization, because you might find different examples of leaders and managers in an organization. Others are commandist in their approach to doing things. Others are very consultative and involve lower level staff in the way they do things. So this area has got that level of importance to us, so that the core engine of what we have in order to deliver these audits must not be unnecessarily disrupted, because there's been a number of years of investment in growing the talent that we have, and if there's no proper focus on the culture, the values in the organization, it will probably mean that we must rebuild from scratch once people decide they don't want to associate themselves with a place where people talk about values but they don't that our focus here is to identify what was agreed to be done and to focus on the facts that support whether it has or has not been done. So in a way, we're also encouraging our staff to stick to the truth as they found it in the environments, because sometimes in getting involved in some of those debates, which sometimes also, as you indicated correctly, have got certain perceptions that come with people because of their experience, we always try and limit our level of involvement and engagement to the fact that any other person from the office who had gone to your department to look for a similar document would have arrived at the same conclusion about it. It doesn't matter whether they are 12 years experience in the audit office or whether they have been here for 3 years or they are defined as of a particular racial group and all of that. So I think that is one of the key things that we emphasize on, to make sure that the ability of the office to stand to the facts that it uncovers cannot be questioned when we report on our audits. And of course, I think one of the things that we make sure we also don't do as part of this ongoing culture program is to try and get less and less involved in those kind of arguments, but make sure that ours is to get the auditees or whoever we're engaging with to focus on either giving us the answers to the issues that we're testing as part of the audit, or if you don't get the evidence or the heaviness of it, that's those times when we take an evaluation of the evidence that we got and make an appropriate conclusion on it, whether they end up being qualified or not. So, yes, there's a number of those things. I'm sure people will throw around all sorts of things and even sometimes write letters and saying, are you now conniving? Sometimes with the executive, that will be somebody who is probably a senior manager in a particular organization. So there's a number of those kind of things that are trying to deflect on what the audit is about, and we also use this to promote an understanding amongst our staff that that's not what our business is about. It's about, am I happy with the evidence given or not? So there's an element in us which says that if we can continue to be cold and clinical about the stuff that we wanted to arrive at conclusions on, it would assist us to not be unnecessarily diverted.
But the flip side to the matter would be obviously allegations such as those would be allegations that go to the question of independence and without fear of favor, which are explicitly stated in the mandate in the Constitution. So they are important matters. And obviously, if evidence is put to yourselves, or prima facie allegations, if they do ever happen, given the fact that we all human, so human element might creep in, like in any other institution, one would argue that constitutionally you would have the obligation to intervene and to correct so that the perception or the fact is actually dealt with decisively. So I would be understanding you to say you don't simply dismiss such perceptions or allegations where they have no substance. Obviously, you shouldn't allow them to distract you from your focus, but where there is something to work with, you certainly would not shy from actually engaging with it and getting to the bottom of it and dealing with it decisively. Just wanted to make sure that I've got the full context correctly.
I'm very sorry to do this, Chief Chair. I actually need to leave urgently for the airport, and I just need to get the corrections to the next section on the table so that I can walk out of here knowing that the Secretariat have recorded them. So could I just mention those, please, and then please AGSA achieved this target. The AGSA might have set the target, but it couldn't have achieved it all on its own. So that needs to be turned around. And it needs
to clarify, you're basically correcting the
language, yeah.
That's that were made by the researcher
yeah.
in the drafting of the document.
Correct.
All right.
So that sentence should begin, this target was achieved as the national government paid its debt in 19 days. I hope the AGSA appreciates the difference. Yes, he does. Next paragraph, at the bottom of the page, second sentence, again, after the comma, AGSA did not achieve its target. The wording there should be, this target was not achieved as provincial departments only paid, etc., etc. Last paragraph on the page, second last line, instead of AGSA did not achieve its target, that should be this target was not achieved. And then the last one is on the next page, second line of the page, and the second sentence, however, and then it's the and the, it should be just however, the audit fees of local government structures.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Most of these corrections we effected last week, didn't we? Researcher, can you just clarify why this were not effected so that we don't repeat this again? Was it an oversight perhaps?
Maybe I just keep them.
Sorry?
Maybe I just keep them when I was
all right.
updating
them. You don't have any further questions?
Yes.
Oh,
thank you very much.
All right, thank you. All right. Okay. Now, essentially, these are just corrections that were made last week, and I think we should really be more diligent so that we don't keep on repeating corrections again and again. Can we go back to where we are? We had just finished the culture index thing. Can you take us to the next area? Section 7.5, I suppose, would be.
7.4. The question there is based on the fact that the auditees, they were paying their audit fees late, of which the Act stipulates that, the PAA stipulates that the audit fees should be paid within 30 days. Then the question that's required from the AG is that, is the explanation right, with regard to the fact that the Act says, is it so practical to collect
each other should be a matter of last resort between the various entities within government. So one would assume it is in that spirit that you probably do not readily resort to collection through legal means. But you want to comment around the matters?
Chair, we according to what you just said now, we have always adopted that approach that it probably will not be in our best interest either to go all out and take legal steps and stuff like that. So we felt that the best was maybe to try and continue to persuade the people that owe us audit fees to pay. But I think having adopted that stance, there are certain specific situations where we've decided we are going to issue legal letters because we just felt that it is something that's provided in law, and if we are constantly ignored and there's no adhering to commitments made, then we have taken steps in regard to implementing the provisions of taking legal action. I think on one or two very old debts that go back to the likes of 2005, 2006. Almost every year we audit, we just don't get paid. So I think those extreme situations, we have decided to proceed against those specific authorities. As far as the interest charge is concerned, is another one as well that we tried to, I guess that's your next question about the interest as well. We tried not to implement that because you are growing the amount owing by another amount, where the initial one was not being paid, but you are increasing it by additional more money. So it's really one of those things that we felt it's just going to make the debtor's book grow and grow and grow and grow. And in reality, is that when we hear some of these municipalities say, I'm not able to pay you, sometimes we also have an insight into exactly why they are not able to pay. Either they are not generating their own resources or they've got resources limited to doing certain things. So I must say that over time there's been an element of leniency on our part, but with effect from 1 May this year, if I'm not mistaken, we started processing interest because we looked at this thing over time in the office as well and felt, even though we felt like not doing it before, but I think it's time that we now have to process that. So those two questions on the debt collection regarding legal action and charging interest on overdue accounts, we are now doing it.
Yes, Honorable.
I would like to know if they have paid, then you said sometimes they don't pay as from 2005 up until now. Why do you keep on auditing those people who doesn't want to pay?
I suppose part of the issue would be that they have a constitutional obligation to audit everybody, whether they pay them or not. If they don't audit them, they will be falling foul of the constitution itself.
Another question, Jay.
But yeah, all right.
Do they allow them to pay in installments at least, because maybe if they are owing you a big lump sum, they can't pay it in full. Maybe giving them the option of paying in installments.
And maybe the question you are asking earlier could be asked in the reverse. What happens if the auditee chooses not to subject themselves to the audit process? Because they say we can't afford it. what do you? Yeah, I've answered myself earlier, but I want to know what do they do
sometimes the people that we make those arrangements with, they don't honor those commitments. It's like somebody giving you post-dated checks. They are not money until they are cleared through the bank. So there is an option for that which we do provide to them just to ease their cash flow pressures. But as I say, they don't always honor some of the authorities. They will make that commitment just to get you out of their office for some future time, and then they will have a different argument when you come back again. Then the other point regarding how this gets clarified, classified, yes, I think everybody in the system, when they submit their budget for approval, it's basically line items. And if those line items include audit fees, then it means that they are spending money. If they claim them now not to have an audit fee, money for paying for audits, then it means that they have diverted that money to other use, which, as you correctly say, Chair, ought to be classified as unauthorized expenditure. And I'm sure in most financial statements you would have seen quite a number of unauthorized expenditures. But the reality is that we're still back to square one. We still don't have the cash in the bank, whether it is unauthorized expenditure or something else. So I think the question could then be when they get evaluated by their portfolio committee, and the portfolio committee sees a list of unauthorized expenditure that has been disclosed, how do they act on it from their own oversight point of view? Because I'm sure it would be a matter that the portfolio committee would have to deal with, because they would have approved their budget on the understanding that it will finance those line items that are included in the budget, including the fee for the Auditor General. Now, I think it will probably be something that needs to be tested with them as to how do they hold their respective accounting officers to account, particularly in the municipalities, if they spend money on things other than what it was approved for. Maybe that's something that the committee can assist us as well in giving it prominence within the area of portfolio committees and all of that. partners that we work with on the international front. As you will recall, currently we are in a tripartite relationship with China and France. France is being replaced now by the United Kingdom as auditors to the United Nations Board of Auditors. There are many encouraging signs of very satisfied customers, I must say, in generally within the community of the United Nations agencies in respect of the type of technical up-to-dateness that comes with our staff. And the big challenge is that we are not able to make this international auditing exposure available to all and sundry in our office because of the need to put up people that have got the technical knowledge and who are able to adapt in sometimes very difficult environments. Some of these things are people going out to peacekeeping missions in the Congo and in various other countries, and imagine in a peacekeeping operation, it's not a conventional environment. It's not an environment where you walk into an office and find all the things that you're looking for. Imagine if somebody says you must verify that helicopter that was bought or that was loaned from Cyprus or from any other country. Sometimes the challenges that we face are about the difficulty and the terrain where our auditors need to go. But it's not all peacekeeping, obviously. Others are administration units within the United Nations. And we've got feedback as we go through some of these reports that they find that the auditors coming from the South African office are quite clued up about some of the issues that they are highlighting from a governance point of view and all of that. And I think it almost talks to what we spoke about the other day in Scoba, where there was a recognition of this among others, that the South African auditor generally is probably among the ones that are in the top ranks if you compare them to the rest of the countries that we included in the World Economic Survey. So for us, I think the big one, limiting factor, is that we can't have every single person in the office exposed to this because we've got to keep in mind our local responsibilities. Sometimes they're going to go out and do field work in various countries at a time when there's a competing need for the same resources locally. So the way we try and do it, even in setting this limit of 5% of our income, we said, if our income, and this 5%, by the way, is historical, and I guess it was based on analysis that was done then when it was determined, but the idea behind it was to say we do not want to commit an excessive number of resources to our international obligations at the expense of doing justice to what we are supposed to be delivering on the front. And 5%, and maybe AJ can elaborate on it because I wasn't around when it was set up, but it seems to be a number that generally people were comfortable with from a percentage point of view, to say if 5% of our total revenue is the maximum, then we will not be collapsing our ability to deliver locally. So I think the second one I've basically answered, that we do a very clear planning around these audits. For example, when the UN Board of Auditors meets, always on their agenda is the area of the budget, which is split between the three countries that are doing that work. So we know already, if we're going to do the accounts for the UN for 2011, already today we know what is the extent of hours that have been committed for that. So we're able to plan upfront, and we're able to plan the visits to the different missions and places where we audit, so that when the crunch time comes for us in July, we don't have a significant number of people out in the field doing international audits. So there's a proper level of planning that we bring about to make sure that this area is not unduly compromising what we're supposed to do.
I think we're going to basically just ask you to summarize your responses to the target five, because the area of creditors that comes after international audits is the converse of debtors, where I think you're indicating that the effect of
that it may also be something worthy to extend invitations to auditors general, particularly within the continent. For example, in that respect, we've had invitations extended to quite a number of those AGs from within the continent, ranging from the likes of Angola, Lesotho, Swaziland, Cote d'Ivoire, Gabon, Namibia, and the DRC, among others on the continent. So some of them came, and some of them at the last minute were not able to attend after they accepted our invitations. So we thought that it was something
and pause, eh?
Hmm?
Oh, it's still moving.
I haven't switched it off.
Mm.